Welcome back to Thursday's edition of World Football Daily. It's not very often that you get a chance to have somebody that you look up to come on the show. I get the opportunity every so often. I'm delighted to be joined today by someone who I would love to say that I could try and model the commentary that I do on, but I don't think I'm anywhere near the standard of this man. Mr. ESPN's Derek Ray joining us on the line today to talk a little bit of Scottish football and football in general. Derek, it's a pleasure to have you back. Happy New Year, mate.
Happy New Year to you, Oliver. Great to be on with you.
We're glad that you're keeping well, my friend. And Celtic are keeping pretty well in the Scottish Premier League. How much have they been enjoying not having Glasgow Rangers there?
Well, I think the Celtic supporters are certainly enjoying it. For Neil Lennon, the manager, it's been a case of really focusing on the Champions League more than domestic competitions in the first half of the season. So it's actually worked to their advantage. They've been able to make certain that they're ready for these huge challenges on the Champions League front, and it's not every day you get a chance to pit your wits against Barcelona, but Celtic, of course, not only did that, they beat Barcelona. But it's a very different dynamic in the SPL nowadays. Celtic have a 9-point lead, and there are certainly those who thought that it would be a more sizable advantage at this time of year. Of course, we're in a short winter break in the SPL at the moment. But it's a tribute to the other teams who I think have upped their game, the likes of Inverness Caithness and Motherwell and Hibs and Aberdeen at times. Although it is inevitable, Celtic will ultimately be crowned domestic champions again.
Do you think the other sides have upped their game because they're more optimistic about the season ahead because there's not going to be two teams ahead of them in the league?
Yes, if you talk to your average Hibs supporter or your average Aberdeen fan, they will say that it's more interesting now, that there is more to play for, that it's not just a case of being cannon fodder for the big two, that the other teams are actually relevant. Now, as I said, Celtic will win the league, but there's a feeling that it means a bit more to these other clubs. And it is nice to see teams like Inverness under former England captain Terry Butcher prospering. Rangers, one of these days, will come back into the top flight of Scottish football, but I've always been of the opinion that we have to deal in reality. And the reality of the situation is, at the moment, it's a top flight without Rangers, so let's get on with it and make it the best it can be. And Rangers are in the third division, the fourth tier, if you like, and their supporters are having their own party there.
Derek, can you explain to us then why Rangers are potentially looking to come to the English Football Conference? You'd have thought that they'd be able to move themselves back up into the SPL soon enough, but going into the English Conference, surely that means they're relegating themselves to potentially being a championship side in the next 10 years.
Well, I think there's a lot of talk and double talk, and you never quite know what you should really believe nowadays. I think Charles Green, who's the chief executive of Rangers and the man who fronted the takeover a few months ago, is a crafty guy, and I think he understands who he's talking to. He understands his audience, and he's playing to the core beliefs of Rangers supporters, and he's trying, I think, quite successfully to make Rangers fans think that they're being hard done to at every turn. Now, you and I know, Oliver, that Rangers going to the conference, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen next year either. It's not even simply a case of going to the conference teams, asking them, do you want Rangers? And then saying yes, and it happening. There are more people involved in this, you know, such as the FA, such as the Scottish Football Association, and such as ultimately FIFA. So this isn't going to happen, but it's a nice way for Charles Green, in my estimation, of deflecting attention away from the reality of the situation. And, let's face it, Rangers are still a very well-supported club. They had the highest attendance anywhere in the UK last Saturday. I'm going to watch them at Peterhead this Sunday in a live televised game. And, Rangers supporters are enjoying the current situation. But the wounds of last summer will take a long time to heal. I wonder if they will ever properly be healed. And that's what Scottish football has got to try to overcome.
Is this then a tactic deployed by Rangers to try and ensure that gate receipts continue to be high next season, especially with the potential reformation of Scottish football into a three-league system?
Well, I think that is certainly part of the strategy. And you can't really blame Charles Green. It's his job to maximise revenues, and it's his job to get the supporters enthused. And, you know, the season ticket figure, I was told just the other day, is more than 38,000 now. 38,000 for a team in the fourth tier. Where in the world, where else in the world would that really happen? So, you know, Rangers are obviously now expressing themselves with regard to reconstruction, which has been the hot topic of conversation in Scottish football since the turn of the year. There are many, I will tell you, Oliver, who are very bored by the whole subject. They don't see it really going anywhere. But Rangers, after initially saying that they weren't in favour of the proposed 12-12-18 structure, three divisions of 12 in the top flight, 12 in the second tier, and then 18, and then a strange system of the top eight from the second division joining forces, but the bottom four in the top flight after 22 games. This situation has to be voted on, but Rangers came back with a 14-14-14 proposal. I never like to get wrapped up in the exact numbers. I think Scottish football has to go out and come up with a coherent structure. It doesn't really matter, you know, how many teams are in the top flight to me, how many are in the second division, but it's about clarity and playoffs. And I think Scottish football does need playoffs, you know, for relegation and promotion below the champions in each case. I think it's as simple as that. I don't think you have to overcomplicate it. But, of course, Rangers, you know, don't have voting status because of the nature of the way in which they were let back into the Scottish football structure last summer.
Yes, everything definitely out of Glasgow Rangers' hands right now in terms of Scottish football. You mentioned Celtic have had the opportunity to focus on the Champions League, and one of their standout players in their Champions League campaign, Victor Wanyama, wanted by a number of teams in the UK and elsewhere around Europe. What's the likelihood of Wanyama staying this January? How important is he to Celtic, Derek?
I think you can make a strong case that Victor Wanyama is Celtic's most important player nowadays. And I think he's an example of somebody who was spotted by the excellent John Park, who heads up Celtic's very fine scouting system. And they got him for not very much in modern terms. And they will someday sell him on at a tidy profit, but that day is not this week or next week. Neil Lennon will need him for the very important Champions League battles that lie ahead against Juventus, but he has been attracting quite a bit of attention, I'll tell you, here south of the border. I live in London, even though I work in Scotland just about every weekend, and it's remarkable how many people, journalists, other people involved in football, have brought the conversation to the subject of Wanyama over the last few weeks. It's amazing what the Champions League can do for a player's profile. Of course, I see Wanyama every week in the SPL, and he's very much a modern all-round player. You know, can be deployed in front of the defence, can play as a defender if necessary, but you know, has goals in his repertoire too. And I think he's just the sort of player, he's young enough, just the sort of player who eventually will land at not just any English Premier League club, but a top English Premier League club.
Who does he remind you of right now at the moment, for people that maybe haven't seen Celtic in the Champions League or watched Wanyama in the SPL?
I would say Victor Wanyama has a little bit of Michael Essien in him. I'm talking about the earlier Michael Essien when he first came through the ranks at Olympic Lyonnais. Has that sort of bite about his game. He's more of a goal scorer than Essien. I think he will end up being the sort of player who can bag 5 to 10 goals per season. Because he's a bit livelier in that area of the pitch. So there's a bit of Essien, there's a bit of Patrick Vieira, you know, players like that, I would say. But he's also his own player. He's Victor Wanyama, and he's very proud of the fact that he's the first Kenyan to play in the SPL, and comes from a footballing family. Of course, his half-brother is McDonald Mariga, who's spent most of his career so far in Italian football, was linked with a possible move to Manchester City a couple of years ago. But he is somebody to keep an eye out for, Victor Wanyama.
Derek, Celtic have also been busy bringing players in this January. They've brought in Rami Gershon on loan from Standard Liège, and just recently Thomas Rogic, the Australian, has come into their midfield as well. What can you tell us about Rogic and his impact on this Celtic side?
But it remains to be seen. Of course, that deal has just been going through in the last 24 hours with Central Coast Mariners of Australia. And he's a midfield player who I think, you know, will get his chance for Celtic. I think that's an area where there is an opportunity for a player, you know, to make his mark. You know, Rami Gershon would have played the other night in the kick-around game that Celtic organised in Marbella against Bucharest. But he picked up a knock. But he's the sort of cover player who I think will come in quite handy. He can play in central defence, can play at left back. And they've got him from Standard Liège, and he'll hope to make a case for himself to be a Celtic player on a permanent basis come the summer. So it's all about just adding to the squad for Neil Lennon. And I think it's a pretty formidable squad as it is. You know, I think especially in attack, I think it's very hard to break into the Celtic team as the fourth or fifth attacker at the moment, because there is so much quality there. I mean, Gary Hooper is another one who's been linked with a number of clubs in England and even elsewhere. Georgios Samaras is unpredictable, but he does have quality, as evidenced by his 5 goals in Europe this season, all away from home. And then you've got people like Tony Watt coming through, and a Tunisian by the name of Lassad, who I quite like the look of.
Celtic are obviously prepping a bit of depth for their Champions League campaign as well for this season, Derek. They're playing Juventus in the next round. I know it's a month away and plenty can change in that time in world football, but Celtic are still going to be the underdogs, however much they strengthen this side going into that game against Juventus. Do you give them a chance?
Oh, yes, I give them a chance. I think you're right. I think Juventus are clearly the favourites, and I probably see Juventus just about as often as I see Celtic, because the SPL and Serie A are the two leagues that I cover more than any other these days, you know, from my base here in London for ESPN UK. But I think that Celtic will quite like being underdogs, as of course they were against Barcelona. Nobody gave them an earthly of beating the Blaugrana, and they duly did. I think it's probably been quite helpful to Celtic that there's been a bit of loose talk in the Juventus camp. We've heard not so much from the players, but senior Juventus figures saying, well, it's really inevitable that Juventus will make it through. I think Dino Zoff falls in that category. Michel Platini, who probably should know better than to speak out on these things, the UEFA president, has reportedly said that Juventus are as good as in the quarterfinals. So that won't worry Celtic at all. They know that man for man, they're not as good as Juventus, but they can be a very effective team in the Champions League, as they've demonstrated this season. And funnily enough, I think having the home game first might actually suit them. I think that the big priority will be to make sure Juventus don't score away from home. I think that is doable from the Celtic point of view, and then see if they can go and nick one at the Juventus arena.
I suppose that all depends if Juventus bring in Fernando Llorente as well, though. Could be a very difficult and different situation if they can bring him in. We've got to touch quickly on the news this week as well, Derek, in Scottish football, that Gordon Strachan has become the national team manager. A very proud moment, he said, for himself. What does Strachan bring to the table apart from just patriotism, though? He's an experienced manager.
He brings credibility, and I don't use that word lightly. I think everyone looks up to Gordon Strachan. Well, not really, because he's a bit shorter, actually, than most of us, but you get my drift. He's the sort of person that you do hold in high esteem as a Scottish football fan, based on his achievements as a player and to a lesser extent as a manager, although I think that most people in Scotland would look at what he did with Celtic under very difficult cost-cutting circumstances rather than the more recent job at Middlesbrough. You know, a bit of a mixed bag as a manager, but I've always thought, you know, that he would be very well suited to the demands of international management, and I say that because he rarely spends more than a couple of years at one club. So, you know, the suggestion is that he's sometimes, you know, outlives his welcome, that at a certain point he has to move on. But of course, with the national team, he doesn't need to be with the players every week. You know, that there's less chance of Gordon Strachan himself getting bored with the job. And I think he'll enjoy now in his mid-50s the idea of going to watch players. He does a lot of television work, actually, for ourselves, for ESPN here in the UK, and also for ITV. So he's got into that rhythm already. And I think that the players, you know, will, when Gordon Strachan says something, they will listen to that and take that on board, because you know, he was one of the greatest Scottish players of his generation, and for me, he was the obvious choice as the successor to Craig Levein.
Do you think being out of managing for a fair bit of time now, 3 years or so, will have helped him to kind of reassess everything that happened at Middlesbrough, because he didn't have the best time up in Middlesbrough, sorry, and going back to managerial kind of with a fresh outtake on it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that he's been able to take stock of the situation and perhaps reflect on, you know, what didn't go to plan at Middlesbrough. And you're always learning. And, you know, he has watched a lot of football over the last few years. He was asked, by the way, at the press conference the other day, would he be moving to Scotland? And he said no. You know, he's still going to live in England. And I think that's fair enough nowadays. Once was the time when that would have... you know, not been acceptable. I think people would have thought the Scotland manager must live in Scotland, but so many potential candidates now play their football in England, whether it's in the Premier League or the Championship. You know, I can tell you, because I go back and forth all the time, it's not that hard if you want to go to Glasgow, Edinburgh or Aberdeen. It's in some respects easier from the south of England than it might be from certain parts of Scotland. So that's not going to handicap him at all. And everyone now is looking forward to this friendly that they've got at Pittodrie next month, which will be Gordon Strachan's first game in charge.
A man after your own heart there, willing to live in England and travel to Scotland for work, Derek. Maybe are you excited by him personally? Because I have heard from a number of journalists that Strachan can be difficult to talk to as a manager.
Yes, he can be. I know that a few colleagues had one or two difficulties when he was in charge of Celtic. If he's not in the mood, then he can be particularly difficult. I always take as I find, and I've never found him to be that way. I think he doesn't suffer fools gladly, let's just say. If he thinks a question is a bit silly, he will say so. He's not one for platitudes. I think, though, he has matured, and I think the Celtic experience is the most important factor here. If you can manage Celtic, and people, you know, who are not from Scotland or perhaps not au fait with Scottish football, I think underestimate how big a job it is managing Celtic, or Rangers for that matter. They are such big clubs. The pressure never goes away. It's full on 24 hours a day. So if you can cope with that, then I think you can certainly cope with a Scotland job.
Derek, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. I'm sorry we've taken so much of your time, and I am slightly gutted we didn't get to branch out away from Scottish football, but there's plenty going on up north of the border there to get our teeth into. We'd love to get you back on again later on in 2013, mate.
Anytime at all, Oliver. We'd love to come back on, and we can talk about whatever you fancy.
Derek, it's an absolute pleasure to have spoken to you today. Derek Ray joining us, ESPN commentator extraordinaire, the man to go to for all things Scottish football, and of course elsewhere around the world. Derek also doing work on Serie A, as he says as well, for ESPN UK, and a man who can pretty much talk about any football topic on the planet right now, and filling us in on everything going on, as I say, north of the border up there in Scotland. Gordon Strachan taking the reins as the new Scotland manager this week, and Celtic bringing a number of names this January, getting into the transfer window, of course, as I say, bringing in Rami Gershon from Standard Liège, and now Thomas Rochick, the kind of almost unknown quantity of an Australian international player. But at the same time, you know, plenty of teams were in for him. Fulham, Queen's Park Rangers and Reading were all looking at this kid.
We know you love that free bit from us here at WFD. Now go and sign up and get access to a huge archive of our content and interviews, and download the best daily podcast in America. Go to worldfootballdaily.com and become a member today.